I want to welcome to Upcoming Discs Matthew Ward and Justin Achung. These guys are the directors of a new movie out by Candy Factory on DVD now. The movie's called Wichita. And I want to welcome you guys for spending some time here at Upcoming Discs. How are you?
Great. Thank you for having us. Doing good.
Well, it's my pleasure. You guys are relatively new to the scene, so there's not a lot out there. So why don't you quick give the folks a little bit of an idea of how you guys met and decided to do a movie together?
Matt and I were both film students at University of Southern California film school. Met there our freshman year, and found a common love for film and storytelling, and kind of a lot of relationship to go from there. And met a few other like-minded colleagues, Yulani, Nico, and kind of sort of put a team together. So when we finished up film school, we kind of collaborated on this project together, and Wichita was kind of our first foray into the whole filmmaking world together.
Now, Matthew, it shows that you have the screenwriter credit here. So was this an idea you guys worked on together, or was this something you brought to the team?
We worked on it together. I mean, Jeb was definitely my baby, my crazy amalgam of real mass murderers. Even Justin and Nate were just integral to, developing characters and plot twists and the look of the movie and, just helping as producers to make sure that all of the pieces and parts were there at my house in Colorado where we shot.
There's a lot of aspects in here we definitely need to talk about. The first is, I find it very interesting that, especially from new filmmakers, that a lot of the movie's focus, especially in the beginning, is on this creative process. This guy, trying to hammer out these scripts for this children's show and, like a little writer's retreat. Yeah, did you bring any of your own experiences to that?
Absolutely. We definitely had times when the cabin fever was real.
Yep.
And, something went wrong on set, and we'd have to, reshuffle and reimagine scenes, on the fly, which meant that some of the writing that we wanted to have in the movie didn't even make it, and there was improv and new stuff that really turned out well, and we're really stoked with. So, I don't know if that answers your question, but...
Yeah, I think another thing that we wanted to tap into with this film was really the self-reflective nature of it in terms of the genre and the conventions of horror films, and so, we took our love for horror films and the conventions of those, and really wanted to work that in, Jeb as this creator, as this writer, as this kind of passionate filmmaker in and of his own sense, really looking at where film and where cinema and media consumption has come to today, and just wanted to try and bring those elements into the storytelling of.
And that's exactly what I mean. If you look at Jeb, I mean, the things that drive him are his passion for what he's doing. Obviously, it drives him a little further than it would drive you normal guys. But there has to be a little bit of that passion that you kind of have a tenuous hold on to that helps you to kind of get inside of his head.
Yeah, definitely. I think, we started this movie over a decade ago, and if we didn't have that drive and that passion for Jeb and for the story and for each other as filmmakers, it would have never gotten so far along. I think that it made us come together in a way, and we met each other in film school because I think we all realized that we were very driven people and that we had common vision.
Yeah, I think also fortunately the passion was there and didn't allow us to kill each other,
And there's also a connection here when you talked about serial killers and stuff, particularly to the BTK killer. Is there any reason why that killer was one you particularly focused on to make your connection a little?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm fascinated with BTK. I mean, there's been over a dozen movies made on this real killer.
Right.
And what the part of him that we focus on in Wichita is his motivation. And what he did, Dennis Rader, he killed like 10 people in the 90s, and then he took a decade off and went back to being, a church member and a normal guy with a wife and a kid.
Right.
And nobody, ever suspected that it was him. And then the reason he got caught was because he started sending letters to the media, to the news, with details of his past crimes to get back on the TV. So it wasn't that Dennis really wanted to go back to killing as much as he wanted to go back to being being, you know, like the Joker of Wichita, who
sure.
I was talking about and afraid of. So that's sort of the dark consumption of media that this film's about and that Jeb eventually plugs himself into.
Yeah, also, it seems like you guys are making a little bit of statement about the kind of voyeuristic trend of reality television and such, and how people are getting more plugged into trying to believe that they're watching something real or just watching people's lives. And you seem to show that makes a big difference, and that's having an impact on this character as well, as he starts to do that himself.
Yeah, you know, I think with Jeff's character, he's been kind of inundated working in the studio realm, working for other people, creating scripts, creating stories, that he's at a point in the event where I think he finds himself wanting to see things in a more better way, see things in a more realistic way, and find the truth of what those things are, of what people do when they think someone is watching.
Exactly.
People really act, because otherwise it all seems contrived, it all seems scripted, and so I think that nature and that desire for him to explore is kind of what leads him to see this writing retreat as kind of the perfect opportunity for him to use it as a voyeuristic experiment to put the camera out and see what happens.
Well, you said that you've been working on this thing for 10 years. Can you tell me what the catalyst happened, what the breaker or the big moment happened that got you on track and finally got this thing filmed and out?
Yeah, you know, it took a lot of time with, you know, first we had a Kickstarter where we you know, asked our friends who were super generous for money to go and shoot like a proof of concept trailer.
Uh-huh.
And then from that, we networked at film school with friends and family, and were able to raise the money to, you know, get this little indie production together in my parents' house in Colorado. And, you know, even though it looks really big and awesome, we were still on such a tight budget. You know, my mom and my dad were cooking for us every day, and, like, we were doing, you know, everything from mechanical work on cars to, weather damage control when it was snowing and raining. So there was just a lot of things that we had to came up that we had to do, and it was really our producers who made it all happen.
And what about this cast? Assembling this cast, particularly Trevor, he's quite a find, because when you're doing a low budget film and you're doing something, you know, that's a little claustrophobic like this, your cast is everything. It's your film, and so I assume that choosing those people and putting them in the right parts was very important, and you did a great job with Trevor. I think he really carries this film quite a bit.
Yeah, Trevor's stunning.
We have a great casting director that helped us find all of our cast, really, that Gilmore. And so, yeah, it was a process. You know, we went through a whole lot of rounds with different people and watched a bunch of TV missions and things like that. And I think when we came across Trevor's tape, we all kind of agreed on the, you know, we could see just idiosyncrasies in the minor details of his facial expressions or the way he chose to deliver a certain line or change on a certain beat. You know, it was really easy to see that he was somebody that got the role, got the character, and was willing to put in the work to bring his character to life. And
right.
So when we met him and when we started collaborating with him and working with him, yeah, it was nothing short of amazing. He got so much to the project.
And what about the chemistry of the cast? Were you guys able to spend any time together before filming began, or were the budget constraints just too much to do that? Was there any time for them to get together and develop that chemistry?
You know, there was very little time, actually. People were kind of from all over the place and were scattered on different projects and jobs before we started shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone came together, and really in no time, no time at all, we had everyone felt like they were, you know, best friends, and they'd known each other for so long. And that's, you know, just a testament to how incredible our cast is and how professional everybody was. And, you know, I know that I grew so much and learned so much from working with everyone and seeing, you know, when we did have adverse times or, you know, we weren't making our page count, how, you know, everyone just came together to do absolutely everything they could to help the production and help the art.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it shows in the movie, and it's just really humbling, and we're so grateful for our cast.
And there's a lot of challenges with a budget film when you're trying to do the best you can with little resources. What did you find the most frustrating? What did you find the biggest challenge?
Well, you know, the weather was difficult. We had had a casting hiccup being at 9,000 feet in elevation. someone we cast actually bowed out after the first 4 days.
Ah.
We had to recast. So we lost almost our first week of production to craziness. And that, you know, makes Wichita as claustrophobic and desperate as it needs to be. So I'm, you know, happy to say that some of those things are congruent with the themes of the story.
I was just gonna do the math, and I think that the change in cast, you know, half a few days into our production was really the major challenge that tested all of us cast crew, us as directors and producers.
Yeah.
Really do the best in finding a replacement, bringing them on, and then working together to be cohesive and pick up and retool the schedule so that we get everything we need. You know, I think like Matt had mentioned earlier, he was revising the script on the fly, changing scenes, omitting scenes.
Right.
Just so that because we got put back a whole week of shooting and our budget constraint, you know, all of these last minute changes needed to happen in order for us to still shoot the movie and get it in the canon. You know, I think like Matt said, it's a real testament to all of our cast and crew, and even Matt as the writer or director to really bring it together and back and push it out to make it work.
Yeah.
Definitely a project I couldn't have done by myself.
Right, and that is kind of one of the magic things about independent filmmaking is you see a lot more camaraderie, you see a lot more people having to cooperate, people having to wear multiple hats, and that sometimes helps to build a community that really helps to overcome obstacles that sometimes people just throw money at.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, time and time again, you know, we've had to rely on our own smarts to make this happen from, you know, learning how to make a private placement memo to web design,
right,
to like everything from, you know, just business plan kind of stuff that we did out of our dorm.
Yeah, and I think also, you know, really relying on different people wearing multiple hats. Also,
right.
Like our director of photography was also our video editor, so all the scenes within the monitors, in the movie mobile and the ambulance, you know, he was...
Right.
We had shot like a few days earlier, and then he was animating them, editing them, so that we could play them back to the screens for the other screens.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just a lot of people wearing multiple hats as well.
Well, and how does that work with two directors here now? How did you guys sort of split up the assignments, or how did you work together? What was your process with two guys?
I think it was pretty natural. We knew what had to happen in scenes, and we figured it out, you know. And there was a lot of stuff that, you know, Justin had to step up and cover because I was wearing my producer hat or my writer hat.
Right.
Whatever has to be done hat. And so Yaniv, you know, Yaniv Alani is a producer, you know, just one of the most brilliant people I've ever worked with. And, you know, this guy loves movies like no other producer I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his development and passion for the project really, really shepherded it from beginning to end.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really natural. So, and what really helped about it, I think, having both of us on set as directors, you know, when one of us was working with an, because everything was on such a tight turn, and, you know, our schedule had kind of gotten crunched in a way.
Right.
It helped where, you know, say Matt took the time to sit and rehearse and work with the actors while I simultaneously, you know, had a conversation with our DP and our shooting crew to set up the next scene.
Yeah. There are certainly some really interesting moments in the movie. I can't help but notice that this hot tub, for some reason, I get this idea that there's something behind that there's some kind of symbolism going on here, and I just got to know, what is it?
Oh, man, I don't know. I think it's just like my love for like the basic instinct, boiled rabbit, sort of like a sexual horror thriller thing.
So a little Fatal Attraction homage?
Yeah, sure. Hot tubs are so fun.
Well, and there have to be tons of influences. What kind of films do you guys look to, and what kind of films do you think have influenced at least your early start here? You've got a lot to learn, obviously, and that's doing it's the best way to do it. But what kind of filmmakers and films do you look up to and try to at least...
I mean, time at USC, you know, Justin and I just watching movies together. And, you know, I think before we really even knew that Wichita was going to be a thing, you know, I remember watching Psycho with Justin. I remember watching The Shining. You know, I remember watching Taxi Driver. And I think, you know, just those three character pieces alone influenced us so much in the kind of movie we wanted to make and the tone, you know, what we wanted to say with the movie. And we love horror movies, you know, Cabin in the Woods and, you know, just a fun horror movie like that, Scream.
And the ending, we don't want to give anything away because people are going to listen to this and may have not watched the movie yet, but the ending kind of doesn't go where we expected to go.
I wanted to push the third act as far out as we could, and without giving it all away.
Yeah, no, let's not do that.
A little bit inspired by a true story of the film director Donald Cammell, who I think Don't Look Now was Nicholas Rogue. He actually shot himself and asked his wife. He didn't die and asked his wife to watch. If she could get him a mirror to watch. Last moments.
Right.
So that doesn't really spoil the movie. There's a lot that happens at the end of that. But it's sort of like this the gaze that of Jeb, you know, is watching ends up finally disrupting him and he's, you know, he's totally narcissistic of that.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot going on here about, you know, the cinema verite thing, the truth in cinema. That's a big thing for Jeb. Jeb's, it looks like, is searching for truth in his cinema. And I got to wonder if that drives you guys a little bit, too.
Totally. Yeah, go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that definitely drives us Justin's inspiration in terms of our work moving forward. And so, yeah, you know, it's kind of that idea of what is reality, what is real, how do you communicate that through cinema, through film, and because, you know, a lot of the documentaries you watch, things like that, are very much contrived, they're very much told stories, and so, but really looking at the essence of what something is, what lens you go to get there, to find that truth.
Was there anything left on the cutting room floor that you kind of wished had stayed in there or maybe changed the narrative a little bit?
There were definitely things left on the cutting room floor, but they were left there for a reason. I think, you know, even more about the verite thing was we just, the nature of this production, shooting almost all of the movie in, you know, one house.
Right.
It really let us, you know, do improv and go back to locations and rework some stuff. And so we definitely did, you know, a lot of molding and storytelling on the cutting room floor. But I think that the cut of the movie now is the best possible cut that it could be.
Mm-hmm. So what's next for you guys? Are you guys going to continue to work together? Do you have any plans for something following this up?
We've both been super busy. I've been focusing on my screenwriting, and Justin was booked to make this amazing documentary. Justin, why don't you tell him more about Hokulea and what you've been working on?
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us about it.
After we had shot Wichita and going into post-production, I moved back home to Hawaii and have been working with this production house, 40BTV, and over the last 3 years, we've been filming and serving and documenting the worldwide voyage of Hawaii's voyaging crew, trails basically without any modern instruments, no GPS, fixed maps, or anything like that.
Right.
There's a navigator on board that uses celestial knowledge and the knowledge of the environment around them to keep their course and to find their destination. And so they were going, taking a trip around the world, connecting with different communities, different ports over the last 3 years. And we were fortunate to be the documentarians on that board. Capture that story, and just actually a week and a half ago, the canoe made its way back home to Hawaii for the first time in 3 years. So now that that's finished, I think the next is to focus on all the thousands of hours of footage that we have to craft some kind of document. Yeah, definitely. But, you know, like Matt said, you know, he's got a lot of a lot of switching in the work, a lot of new stories, and I will see what the future holds, but it'd be awesome to collaborate again and turn out another feature sometime.
Thanks for watching the movie. It really means the world to us.
No, I absolutely enjoyed the movie. It's out, Candy Factory. It's on DVD now. People should definitely check it out. And you guys hopefully will be hearing more from it.
On Prime, Google Play, iTunes, and we'll be on Netflix and more platforms in a few months.
Okay. How about internationally? You got any deals going to send it over to some other countries?
Hopefully, but nothing confirmed yet.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, Candy Factory's doing a good job with this release. It's a good-looking DVD.
Incredible. So passionate and motivated, and it's just, you know, a joy to see what they're working on and what those guys have on their slate.
Yeah, it's a good looking DVD, and you guys are looking good on there, and I hope that we start to see more from you guys either together or separately. Keep it up, keep going.
It's an honor, Gina.
Appreciate that, Gina. Thank you.